It was Peter Pan's laughter. It was so good. But then there were scenes where you're like, why am I watching this? This is just some of the worst movie filming, you know, known to man. It was just awful.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
So Ted, here we are. We're back. You know, another Friday. One thing I learned last week talking with you is, you learned about rom-coms and film school, and somehow, you know, your wife was saying how, like, she just was along for the ride, and you're like the rom-com guy. Care to explain?
Among other things, yes. We went to film school in Prague, went to undergrad a little later in life, so I already had the wife. We were the old couple in film school, and she just came to all the classes and audited the whole program. It was fun.
And they let her sit in. Did she pay? Yeah. Did she have to pay for it?
No. Super casual.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, those checks. Anyway, first trailer tonight.
Tag, you're it.
Okay, wait a minute. So everybody plays tag, right? And everybody's it at some point. Well, I guess one guy, though, in this movie has never been tagged.
Jerry's the best.
Yeah, he's never been tagged. But what I want to know is, and I've always been trying to figure it out, what is it? I mean,
you were the annoying kid that was like, I don't get it. What is it?
Yeah, like, tag, you're it. I know I'm it, but what am I? Right? I'm it. What is it?
I'm sure I have a feeling that Hannibal Buress in this is going to make that joke, because he has the joke about synchronize your watches and he says time is a construct.
Right.
So right. He's completely like a contrarian in the makeup of their friends.
Yeah, so we're looking at Tag, and we have a couple other trailers tonight. And a lot of these trailers that we've been doing lately and the upcoming ones, they have this trailer pre-roll, like a trailer to the trailer. Mm-hmm. The pre-roll to this trailer is a clever one.
I thought so, yeah.
The pre-roll to the upcoming trailers is an annoying one. When we get there, we could talk about it.
Yeah.
The pre-roll to this was cool. You know, it starts off, they just say, hey, we're just introducing our trailer. Thanks for watching, more or less. And then they just get into it, you know, with like some little comedic chase down a hallway.
Yeah. And I love the fact that it's like Jeremy Renner, he's running down like an indescript hallway, and it's all about like the movie. It's all about them making the movie. So it's really, it feels BTS. It feels like they were in a meeting and they said, oh, we have to do like an intro. We have to film something for the intro. How are we going to do it? And they said, all right, well, I have an iPhone. We could just do it on our iPhone right here, you know, because it's clearly like, it looks like a production office, you know.
Oh, totally. No, cell phones nowadays have awesome video.
Right? HD yeah. Video. People watching it on, you know, YouTube anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
On their iPhone or cell phone, yeah.
I'd be interested to see if they have this on the theatrical versions, you know, if they had that little teaser on the top of the trailer that's in the theater.
Okay, so here's what I've been thinking. So we're the trailer junkies. We talk about movie trailers. But when I talk to people who go to the movies, they call them previews.
Yep.
Where has the term trailer versus preview? Because growing up and everything, it's always been previews.
Hmm.
So how did trailers ever get into the mix and we somehow call ourselves trailer junkies? Not preview junkies.
I feel an article coming on. I feel like the lexicology? What is it? How do you say that?
I guess the lexicon of...
Yeah.
Nomenclature.
Nomenclature. That's it. That's
yeah. The nomenclature of what we're talking about versus trailers and previews.
All right.
But getting back to the trailer, though. So really a true story based on a true story.
A 30-year game of tag, you know, and they do a good job in the trailer of setting it up and telling you that it's a real based on a real story, and that the guys played tag 1 month out of the year, and all the wives, you know, they hate it, but they love their husband's close friendship. That's so, it's so clean. You know what I mean? I mean, back when I was still closer to my high school friends. Every year for March Madness, we would go to Vegas for, you know, 3 days, 4 days a week, something like that.
Yeah.
But that, as you get later into your 30s, that week in Vegas can be deadly.
Oh, have children, it all ends. Well, in other words, I don't remember who the actress was. I don't have it up in front of me, but...
Isla Fisher.
Yeah, she said, well, you know, our game of tag is like a gangbang. Sure, if that's the way you look at a game of tag, I guess it is. But okay, what I want to know is two things. And the first is there a game of tag as, what's the way to put it? Like as ridiculously crazy and off the chain, the way it shows, you know, I mean, they're flying off walls and swinging like Tarzan and
jumping off.
Yeah, they're catching air on golf carts and all the, you know. The one guy comes, I mean, maybe so. I mean, the one that where the guy comes through when the one wife has given birth, that I could see happening because all you have to do is stroll through the room. And if planned properly, you could do that one. The other stuff is just hijinks.
Yeah, I think when I was reading, doing some research about the other stuff, I think they did actually do it at one of the participants' parents' funeral. And I think that was another true one that was, you know, that all kind of had them laughing and brought them back to a place that was, you know, a special bond between these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's amazing. They really got like top actors across a lot of different fields. You know, it has like a Hangover feel to it, but it, like I said, it has this air of clean fun that is like a weird thing. You know, does it say if it's rated? I don't even think it's. It doesn't feel, it feels like a PG, you know, it feels like a PG-13.
I would say PG-13, yeah.
It might have an R for some stuff, but it doesn't feel like there's anything, you know, it's not like a total Hangover ripoff or anything.
Yeah, I mean, lots of recognizable faces and names. But my second question, though, is how close to the true story, I mean, with the number of friends, I think in this it's what, four?
Yeah,
and
five. Maybe it's five.
Just overall, I mean, how close is the story in the movie to the real story? Is the real story a little bit more dry? So in this, they just amped it up just to make a movie out of it. Or is it really this pretty wild and outrageous? I mean, I don't know. I guess, how would you know that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to see some BTS and check out some interviews and hear about right. The real guys that got paid for their story about Tag.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually five guys, but a lot of times you see the ensemble shots, and the ensemble shots often don't have Jeremy Renner in it. It seems like he's the biggest actor, although you could say all of those guys could carry their own movie.
Oh, I think so.
Maybe he's their biggest top dollar actor.
Yeah.
But he broke both his wrists during the filming of this movie, and it put him out of the production for, you know, a run of time. And I'm wondering if they kept shooting with those other four guys, and that's why it looks like a lot of those group shots are for the four guys without Jeremy Renner.
Well, and he's the guy that's never been tagged either, though, so.
Yeah. And isn't it weird that they have the still for this when you launch the video? It has like a still of Jeremy in his like leather jacket, and it totally looks like Bourne or something. It looks like a straight up action movie. Still, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of scenes that make you cringe. And, you know, the one thing about these types of comedies that I always fear with going to the movie theater is you show up. Well, let me back up. You watch the trailer. You're like, oh, my God, this thing's going to be so hilariously amazing.
Yeah.
You go and everything funny was already shown in the trailer.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah. That's the one reservation I have about seeing these kind of movies in the theater.
Well, speaking of which, like you saw last week, since we had the week off, you were watching Game Over, Man.
Uh-huh.
Did you feel like it got there for you? I couldn't. I tried to watch it with Anne, and I don't know. There's some scenes in the opening scene that got us completely out of the movie. I was going to revisit it, but some coworkers explained some of the other stuff to me, and it felt like one I could just leave on the shelf and didn't have to waste the 2 hours on.
Well, we watched the movie, both, you know, Clarissa and I watched the movie, and we watched the whole thing. There were some pretty hysterical and hilarious parts, and there were some parts where they just didn't need to show them. You know, leave it to your imagination. It would have been way better, way funnier, way more gruesome, whatever, you know, but like, just, it could, you know, that would, it's like, what is it, an hour 40 or something, whatever that movie was?
Yeah.
I mean, although I will have to say, so in the trailer, they show, going back to the Game Over Man trailer, they show when they're on the zip line connecting the two buildings, when they're on the ironing board, and the ironing board breaks, and they come flying through the window, and they take out a dude and everything. Man, I mean, I was gutturally laughing out loud. It was so hilarious to me. I don't know why I found it so funny. I mean, there were parts where, like, it was pee your pants laughter. It was so good. But then there were scenes where you're like, why am I watching this? This is just some of the worst movie filming, you know, known to man. It was just awful. You know, with some of the stuff, it was just so, like, crass, you know, and grotesque. But then again, like I said, there were some scenes that were just pee your pants laughing so hard.
Cool.
But yeah, that, you know, with Tag, that's my, I should say complaint. I haven't seen it or anything, but that's my concern or worry, is that it's going to be one of those movies. It looks really awesome and amazing, and you're going to laugh, and it's, you know, looks pretty, you know, more or less wholesome. So you go, and everything that was funny is in the trailer, and then there's all these parts connecting the funny parts that you just don't care about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's Ed Helms and Hannibal Buress. They're there and they're just comedic characters. They don't have, you know, I don't think you have to give them material for them to be funny. It feels like they can just, you know, read the phone book kind of thing. And when they're doing whatever it is they're doing, it doesn't matter what they do. They're funny people. So Isla Fisher also, I think she has that similar, and John Hamm's a good straight guy to their wackiness, and I'm a big Jake Johnson fan from all of his movies, and what's the name of that girl? he's best known for New Girl, so New Girl back in the day, and then he was in The Mummy. He plays the Tom Cruise's best friend in The Mummy that we just saw this past week.
Yeah, I mean, this is like Infinity Tag, you know, like it's the game that never ends. And just because you get tagged, now you got to go tag the next. It's like, at what point do you say, all right, you know what, man, like I'm out. I got to go eat dinner or what, but it doesn't matter. It's like, this is the, like, I can kind of imagine the time frame. Like they said 30 years or whatever, but like you get tagged at some event of whatever the event is, and maybe your buddies live across the country, and it might be one of those things. It's like summer vacation, and you're like, baby, hey, I know we were talking about going to Europe and stuff, but we need to make a stopover in, you know, Miami or wherever. I don't know, but we're making a stopover in Miami. I'm going to be there for 2 days, you know, to hunt down Willie. And once I hunt down Willie, I'm going to tag him. I'm getting back on the plane and on our way to Amsterdam we go, you know, or whatever. I mean, I am
interested in the minutia of the rules, because it feels like they said in the trailer, it's only 1 month out of the year that they play tag. But it feels like, you know, when you play tag, you're just always tagging people. And it feels like there's got to be a rule that you only get one tag per day or something like that. Or, you know, how do you keep people from just losing it and, like, you know, running around like crazy at a reception at a wedding or something, you know?
Well, that's easy. No tag backs. Once you get tagged, you're done. Yeah, you're right. Like a tag for the day. So like if you get tagged at the wedding, all right, good, I'm it. So it's going to be like, I don't know, like go tag whoever, like see you next year, you know, like you're right. It might be one of those things where it's tag once a month.
Yeah.
You get really one shot at tagging somebody, you tag them, and like, sure, it's been going on for 30 years, but that's really only 30 tags.
Right. It's cool because it's like, it reminds me of the time frame, kind of reminds me of fantasy football. You know, you hear a lot of stories about fantasy football leagues and loser has to get a tattoo of the winner's choice. And people are like, you know, 40-year-old men are getting tattoos of unicorns on their, you know, calf and stuff like that. So
I've never heard of that. And remind me to not play in those leagues.
Well, I think this past year somebody got a Bieber tattoo because he got He got payback for him having the unicorn tattoo the year before.
Oh, man.
I'll send you some of those pictures because they're hilarious.
But yeah, you know, I mean, movie looks fun for sure. I'm definitely not going to see this in the theater.
Uh-huh.
This would be one of those, you know, again, Saturday nights, we're sitting there, like, put the kids to bed. It shows up on streaming, like, you know, whatever, Netflix or Prime or something. And yeah, we'll watch it for sure. But, you know, and then getting back to what I've talked about, you know, weeks prior, I try to avoid these kind of movies in the theater because you go to the theater and you're watching and everybody's laughing and kind of the slapstick of it and all this kind of stuff. And you miss so much of what's going on because you're laughing. The people next to you, the people in front of you, everybody around you is laughing. And if it's like a back-to-back joke, you've always missed a second joke. So
my daughter likes this, you know, she loves Hamilton, and she's reading the Hamilton behind the scenes book on how Lynn like wrote all the music for it and everything like that. And after they had played a couple times off Broadway, they already had like applause breaks, and she said they have to put in extra bars of music in the songs for the applause break, so they're not like trying to sing the next song over all these people applauding like in the theater. So
yeah, no, I can totally understand.
I agree with you. For as far as will I see it, I don't think I'll be making it to the movie theater for this one. I think I'm happy about this one because I feel like this is a movie that I could get Anne to watch without having to convince her that we're going to get over, you know, the many lewd humps that we had to try to get over in Game Over Man.
So do you find like what I saw in the trailer, it was kind of like every episode of Tag throughout the trailer was, what's a good way to put it? It was almost like it was a greater event than the previous Tag. And it was like they had to continuously outdo themselves. And each Tag became more outrageous than the Tag prior.
I think that's a filmic technique that you would have to just reorder. You know, you take the truth and then you have to be true to the story of the movie. And I think that's just a way to build anticipation and build action so that your audience is entertained in a way that escalates.
Right.
So I appreciate that. And I think even if it's not true to what really happened to these guys, you know, some years are going to be better than other years. And I think you need to present it in a way that it builds in, you know, in the filmic form.
Yeah. So thought just occurred to me. So my aunt and her brother, every Christmas, they always send each other some super clever gift. And each year they try and outdo each other from the previous year and so on.
Is this like White Elephant?
No, not really. It's more like, you know, so my, as an example, my aunt gets a puzzle from her brother. And okay, so she starts putting the puzzle together. And like at the time, I don't know, she's probably 45 years old or something, or 50 years old, whatever she might be. And she's putting a puzzle together, and it's like her eighth grade graduation photo picture that she's putting together, you know? And and so they always try and outdo each other in which, or like the cleverness of the gift that they're giving in this sort of, you know, it's just kind of like, I wouldn't say it's Tag, but it's like, you know, my gift can outdo your gift for Christmas in ridiculous comedic nostalgia.
Right.
You know, I guess is the way to put it. And every year, I mean, without fail, they do this and they always have a new, and they're super clever. I could never think of half of the stuff they do, you know, and just sometimes they'll find toys, you know, it might be like a Barbie doll, but it's not Barbie, but it's like Janet, you know, my aunt's name is Janet.
Uh-huh.
And like, they just find like in I would say Toys R Us, but they're going away. But they find like, you know, just some doll on the shelf called Janet, you know? So then like, oh, you know, so Ralph goes, her brother goes and gets it, you know, and sends it to her. And it's like a Janet doll, you know, and just all this. It's just so funny because like each year in, year out, they're doing this. And it's kind of like Tag. Year in, year out, they're tagging, you know, it's just, you're next.
That's cool.
You're it. Yeah,
It's a story about traditions, right? I mean, all these things, traditions among family, traditions among friends, you know, it's nice. It's sweet.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Cool. So do you have a three-word review for Tag?
I do have a three-word review.
Tag, you're it.
See, you could do your own three reviews. No, I went with Jerry's Tag Supremacy to be a play on the Bourne.
The Bourne. Gorn
supremacy,
nice.
Because Jerry is better than a tag than any of his friends.
Well, he's never been it. All right, so how about we take a break?
All right.
And after the break, we come to House of Tomorrow, coming up on Trailer Junkies Podcast.
And at the show, we know he's straight edge, so we thought it's funny to invite a straight edge band and a straight edge guy to a kegger, you know, at my house that's four blocks away. And we said to everybody, you know, during the show, we're like yelling, "Did you get our note? Did you get our note?" And he's like, "Are you the guys that did that?" You know? And he goes, "Don't ever do that again. They scared the crap out of my grandmother." So it's his grandmother's house that he uses as the headquarters for Discord Record.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at @TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at @TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, so The House of Tomorrow. So another coming of age movie.
Yeah, I check out a lot of trailers, way more than I used to, but I love the look of this, you know, it opens up in this, 1950s look at a futuristic house, and it's this crazy geodesic dome.
Right.
And, you know, the kid in the movie, our main character is like squeegeeing windows and hanging out with his grandma and they're hosting a bunch of people in there. So it's just a really nice, another thing. It felt like a wholesome coming of age movie. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, and you said it was in the 50s. Was it in the 50s, or is his grandmother playing video, like recorded video of Buckminster Fuller from the 50s, but takes place in modern times? That's kind of the feel I had.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, just that opening video was from.
Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, it strikes me as one of those, like, you know, there's people today, they get into homesteading, right? So homesteading is like we're living off the land. We're taking care of ourselves. We're off the grid. We could take care of all of our needs.
Yeah.
So when, you know, it's like, which reminds me of how they said in the movie, it's the dynamic way of living rather than what everyone else is doing. Which dynamic way of living and homesteading is kind of the same thing. And for those not familiar, it's like homesteading is people who live off the grid and they raise chickens and gardening and farming and hunting and all this stuff. And what they do is, you know, they kind of have this thing where, like, when the world turns south and everybody, like, it's a free for all and it's like the end of the world, they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because they're living off the land and they're able to homestead. But yeah, until like the 7 billion people who don't have anything come looking for you because you have everything. It's like, it's irrelevant anyway.
It's so funny you brought that up because for the past couple of weeks, our kid's godmother was on, was out of town and she has chickens. So she lives close to us and she asked us to chicken sit for her. And out of the deal, we get free eggs for like the two, three weeks that she was gone. And it was amazing, you know, go over there, feed the chickens, make sure they have clean water, throw some worms at them, and then just scoop up the eggs, you know, and bring the eggs home for our, you know, omelets and weekend breakfast and stuff. So I thought it was cool. We were trying to figure out what's the break even. Should we do it for ourselves? You know what I mean? How much does it cost to make a chicken coop, you know?
Yeah, we thought about doing chickens, but then it's like, yeah, we want to travel. We want to go somewhere. And it's like, okay, what the heck do you, what do you do with your chickens? Like, they're in the backyard, like either getting eaten by coyotes. Then you have to rope somebody in, like
me,
Ted Nan Willett, to come take care of your chickens. But I'll tell you, those eggs are incredible. Those things are incredible. Yeah. But yeah, so with this trailer though, so I'm guessing the time frame is probably like 90s, 2000s, you know, like the aughts. Mm-hmm. So the thing about it, so okay, it starts off The trailer, the movie, is about this grandmother who is sheltering her grandson so he could be like the scientist who like saves the world in the future. Okay. And then there's this twist. Asa Butterfield. Asa, I guess is how you pronounce his name. Sebastian.
Sounds right.
Yeah. So he meets the kid played by Alex Wolff and he turns him on to punk music.
Yeah.
And like, that's where the trailer takes a turn. So is this about the future? Is this about punk music? Well, the way I kind of feel, it's about like this kid finding his way. He wants what he wants. The grandmother wants what she wants for him. But I don't know. You know, it's like it seems like two very different movies in the same trailer.
Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, I think this falls into that. I think it's 50 seconds in is when he puts on the headphones. I mean, he doesn't even know what headphones are. He's like, what do you listen to on those things? You know what I mean? He has no frame of reference for personal music. And you know, an experiential music like this. And I don't know, as somebody who grew up in Washington, D.C. in the 90s, I mean, Fugazi was it. Like, the D.C. punk scene was phenomenal. Discord Records, Ian McKay, he was amazing. We went to Fort Reno. Every time they were there, it was like four blocks from my childhood home. So we put a note on his grandmother's front porch, and we like took apart a Coors, it was a Corona light box. And on the inside of the Corona light box, we're like, come to our kegger after your show at Fort Reno. And we just went for the Discord Records. It's in Georgetown. So we went for the address that he lists as the headquarters for Discord Records is his label. And at the show, we know he's straight edge. So we thought it's funny to invite a straight edge band and a straight edge guy to a kegger, you know, at my house. It's four blocks away. And we said to everybody, you know, during the show, we're like yelling, did you get our note? Did you get our note? And he's like, are you the guys that did that? You know? And he goes, don't ever do that again. They scared the crap out of my grandmother. So it's his grandmother's house that he uses as the headquarters for Discord Record. Anyway, punk rock to me is amazing. And the way that this film captures it, I think it does a really, really good job of capturing the kinetic energy of punk music. And I think punk has a special, the word punk, you know, it has this energy built into it that you kind of have to blurt it out to use it. And I think it's captured really well in the second half of this trailer. You know, he's sweating like crazy, you know, friend's shaving his head. And, you know, both these guys, they need this for very different reasons. Both of them are trying to escape the protection of their parental units, whether it's your grandmother or whether it's your father who's been with you for heart transplant. You know what I mean? It's like, as a parent, could you imagine like how protective you'd be if your kid had a heart, you know, somebody else's heart or had a heart condition where they need a heart transplant, totally. And then you're like, all right, you're not going outside ever again. You know what I mean? So I understand both these kids need to do that to break free. And then also the parental need to come to terms with the idea of letting these kids grow up. So, it's, you know, that was the part of it. But did you check out the font on this?
The font?
Did you see the font throughout the trailer? It is the worst font in the world. Like they like picked the only like the freest, cheapest route for putting any kind of copy on this whatsoever. Give it another look right there. You can see.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
It's just like amazingly underutilized. And I guess there's a punk angle to that, but I don't know. I would have done something a little more rancid, a little more Sex Pistols, and a little less aerial.
Speaking of the punk and everything, like the kid says, like, what are you listening to in those things? You know, you prepare yourself. Like, do you have to prepare yourself for punk?
I think you do.
I mean, maybe you do.
I think you do.
Yeah, maybe you do, because it's like abrasive in some regard.
It totally is. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, there's a lot of subtle comedy, I think, that makes you laugh. And, you know, the one cool thing I thought was when his grandmother says she's sitting at the piano and they're painting and she says, Sebastian, what are you mumbling? Because, you know, he's mumbling like punk lyrics or whatever.
Yeah.
And he has the punk side of things. The grandmother's sitting at the piano punk tends to be like drums and guitars, and the grandmother's kind of the old school, you know, piano, whatever you want to call the music that can be played with piano. I mean, probably a lot can be played with piano, but the cool thing I thought about that was like kind of the juxtaposition of the old with the new, you know, her being old, him being young, the piano being old, the punk being young, and just that juxtaposition of the two different people, the two different types of instruments, and the types of music that comes from both. Though punk out of a piano must be like incredible if you're good at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never seen piano. I think they're too expensive to mosh
to bang on.
Yeah. I think the closest is probably Ben Folds. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then right at the 1 minute mark, I got to say, though, I thought that was probably the best part of the whole trailer. You know, they have the testimonials.
Yeah.
And that's the point when I decided I actually like this trailer, because they show Asa Butterfield.
Because there's a bicycle.
Because he's riding his bicycle. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's a beautiful shot. It's a beautiful wide shot of him riding a bicycle. There you go. Now I know how to get Jim. Just put a bike in it. Just put a bike in a nice shot.
Call me by your name. There's bikes. I like, you know, whatever. But so who's the target audience for this, would you say?
I think it's like any, like, I think it's me. It's, you know, it's somebody who grew up with the punk scene, whether it's the New York punk scene, the DC punk scene. Did you get into punk or no?
Yeah. Oh, I totally did. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the 80s.
Was Chicago a punk? Did Chicago a punk scene?
No. I mean, it was more Dead Kennedys, Sex Pistols.
Well, Sex Pistols is punk, I would say.
Oh, of course they are. Yeah. And then, you know, The Clash.
Yeah.
You know, but that was like, you're talking probably late 70s to 80s punk. By the time the 90s rolled around, I was probably done with punk. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, you know, I'll go back to The Clash, but, you know, I would say they're punk-ish. So they're more, although I still like the Sex Pistols, but yeah, getting into some of the more just screaming into the microphone type stuff. Yeah, I've kind of grown past that.
When Bryce was about 4 years old, I played some Fugazi for him, and he just naturally just started banging his head. And I was like so enamored with like my 4-year-old son getting into.
How old was he?
He was four.
Oh, four. Okay.
And I was playing Burning. There's Something Burning in My Eyes is the line, you know, and it's like, it drolls on, and just seeing him in the kitchen just banging his head was phenomenal.
It's hilarious.
So that's where this movie takes me. You see Sebastian in a mosh pit, sweaty from head to toe, just bodies pressed against each other. And I have such fond memories of those times with my friends and strangers kicking the crap out of each other and just like pushing your way to the stage. You know, at Fort Reno, you couldn't always get a crowd going, but my friends would surf on a crowd of like 5 or 6 people, and then we just throw them on the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like you try to surf on 4 or 6 people, and after you go past a couple people, you know, you can't hold those guys up anymore, so you just end up throwing them on the ground.
Yeah, everybody lets go. So let's talk about the title for a second, though.
Yeah.
House of Tomorrow. Or did you have more you wanted to say?
No, that's cool. I like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so talking about the title, The House of Tomorrow. So the geodesic dome and getting into, you know, living off the land or living the homesteading lifestyle and all that stuff. But how does that fit into punk, the punk scene and all that stuff? I mean, are they kind of implying House of Tomorrow is within the music industry? Or, I mean, what do you think about that?
I don't think so. So I think that there are some indicators that this is a great movie, but it kind of lacks a little bit of the marketing flair, you know, like the whole idea of using the wrong font or using something that's so basic as a font. You know, the purist or the true punk aficionado inside the movie that would say, screw that, it doesn't matter what the font is, or it doesn't matter what the title is. But I think it matters. I think The House of Tomorrow is a bit of an undersell of what this movie is. So the trailer does a great job of showing the craft that went into making this movie. But then I feel like the supporting cast at Shout Factory, maybe, or the people that are trying to, you know, do the marketing for this, have kind of, you know, fallen a little bit short on supporting this movie.
Yeah,
you know, giving it a great title, you know, that is evocative. You know, does, you know, there's nothing about that title that says coming of age, not even in any nuanced way.
Right.
So I think those are the kind of things that you could, you know, you could spend a week on, brainstorm it. You know what I mean? Like, bring the director in and say, hey, are you completely married to this title? Because we might be able to get a little more out of, you know, a little more juice out of it if it's something that is more evocative.
Well, yeah, I mean, the movie is based on a book that came out in 2010.
Oh,
and I was reading Sagan.
Is that why it's called House of Tomorrow?
Yeah, so it came out in 2010. I don't know who the author was, but the director, he read the book and he thought, oh, I got to make a movie out of this. And that's pretty much how this came about. You know, I was just curious why even just the book itself was called House of Tomorrow. I mean, I get the whole the Buckminster Fuller side of things and all that. I mean, how does it fit into punk? And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, since you said that, I checked it out. And even that, it's like it says the House of Tomorrow, but a lot of the cover art for it has a picture of a heart on it. And it has a mix of typography. It looks like a bit of a ransom note.
Yeah, ransom
note. I think a ransom note, that says punk to me, you know? Like,
yeah,
mixing, yeah. The mixing of fonts, like a ransom note, and the picture of a real heart with the arteries, like, you know, loose, untied ends. Even with this title, all these other book jackets, they have an evocative nature to them without even changing the title. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe House of Tomorrow's okay. But when you only have the title and you don't do any of the font stuff, which maybe they didn't do it because they'd have to pay for all those fonts. But who knows? You know, come up with your own fonts and do something. Spray paint it somewhere, you know, spray paint it on the actual geodesic dome house or something.
So the title is House of Tomorrow, but when you look at the movie poster I pulled up,
oh, yeah,
it says make your own future. So in other words, I think it's that the House of Tomorrow, like, he's the house of tomorrow. So the dome and the house is just a metaphor for his person.
That's funny.
Himself, you know, so, and he's just kind of making his own house, which is what he's making for tomorrow. So make your own future. I mean, again, a coming of age movie.
Yeah, maybe when tomorrow's in the title, you should really rethink the whole title, because I think we've talked about this. We didn't ever cover it, but Edge of Tomorrow was the name of that movie. And everybody calls that movie Live, Die, Repeat. And then you took the log line off of this, when it says make your own future. You know, it has that similar kind of feel to it, where make your own future, it's not concise enough to be another title, but it definitely makes more sense as to the story than The House of Tomorrow.
All right.
So you're not going to see this.
Am I going to see it?
Yeah.
You know, I would see it. This is one of those ones. It's not going to draw me to the theater.
Yeah.
Looks very cool. I think this comes out.
Oh, yeah. April 27th.
Yeah, this comes out April 27th. The prior one that we did, Tag, when does that release? We didn't talk about that. We should probably put that in.
Okay. Tag releases June 15th.
Okay, yeah, and Tag releases June 15th. And then getting to our next movie, I know you have a three-word review, but we'll just talk really quick about The House with a Clock in Its Walls.
Uh-huh.
That comes out in September, but there's no actual date yet.
Not yet, yeah.
Since we're talking about releases.
And on The House of Tomorrow, it comes out on April 27th. I don't think anything else is coming out on April 27th. Do you?
Not that I know of. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of things.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Avengers Infinity War is coming out on April 27th.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which I know you don't care about.
Tough go at it.
So I think House of Tomorrow is speaking to you. Maybe you go and they'll pay you to go see the movie if you're going to try to see House of Tomorrow the 27th.
And no one else will be in the movie theater or in that particular theater, but there'll be lines for Avengers.
And you'll hear the complete audio from the Avengers coming through the walls, because it'll be on all three sides of whatever little theater.
It'll be booming. That's hilarious. Yeah, you know, and then the funny thing is, it's like Avengers, and then right after that, Solo. So this movie can't stand a chance.
Yeah.
You know, as far as box office.
But I think since they didn't spend any money on marketing, really, I think all it has to make is $100 and it's in the clear. No.
Well, there's no money spent on marketing. The sets are really simple. I mean, they're in like a kid's bedroom. You know, there's no CGI. It's just that and guitar work.
Yeah.
They're probably finding some knucklehead with a geodesic dome in the middle of the Cascade Mountain Range. And yeah, they don't spend a whole lot on the movie. I mean, you know, so they're ahead of... Hey, they put a few butts in the seats. They're break even. So three-word review, what do you have?
So my three-word review for this, I was trying to give it better title. So I think with this one, it's more of a title to replace that Edge of the House of Tomorrow, whatever it is. So I went with Punk Bubble Boys.
Punk Bubble Boys?
Yeah, because both the boys live in their own kind of bubble from their parental units.
Yeah, yeah, no, I totally get
it. Punk helps them break out. And to me, Punk Bubble Boys sounds like Jersey Boys. It sounds like a musical, you know, like only the craziest punk musical you could ever do.
All right, cool. So final movie, how about we get into the house with a clock in its walls?
There you go. So what did you think we did a couple weeks ago? We did the Harry Potter. No, it's not Harry Potter, but it's, what is it?
Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
So a couple weeks ago, we did that movie. And did this one have anything? Did it make you feel like it was in that vein or?
Completely. Yeah, the soundtrack is very Harry Potter-esque. The cards are very Harry Potter-esque. The magic. So one of the things I had in my notes is it's a magic house or is it a haunted house?
Both, right?
Both. Okay, so what's the difference between magic and haunted? I mean, you could say ghosts and all this stuff, but I mean, like, how would you define magical versus haunted?
Yeah, I think, I guess it's the outcome, right? Or how much control the inhabitants have about it. So it feels like Jack Black has a degree of control. Cate Blanchett and Jack Black, they're definitely masters of some of the stuff going on.
Yeah.
But the creatures in here are going all over the place. Other people were saying Goosebumps. You know, it's a lot like Jack Black's in the Goosebumps movies, I believe.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a nod to that. Oh, I forgot to mention, how great was it to see the old Universal logo at the top?
You know, it's funny. I have that in my notes, and I was going to ask you, why do you think they put the film version of Universal from, like, I don't know, what is it, like 30-40 years ago in there? No, I thought it was totally cool. I mean, I do have that. I wanted to ask you about.
I have a feeling that when you see Amblin up there, like Spielberg is kind of involved. So to me, Amblin automatically brings you back 30 plus years because you have E.T. in the moon.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you revamp that Amblin, it has this space and time where Spielberg was in his heyday. He's moving into a new space where Ready Player One is going to supposedly reignite people into believing that he has this fantasy to sell. But this is part of his production arm, you know what I mean? So he's part of the producers of this. So the Universal logo, I think it's probably something to do with Spielberg and maybe even Eli Roth. It feels like Eli Roth is in that same camp as Quentin Tarantino, where they like the throwback. They like the old
retro,
that, like, the grindhouse and retro, and, you know, when movies were movies and, you know, there was dust on the film and you could see the dust in the projection, you know, through the projector.
Right, right.
I thought this was the one place where Eli Roth could actually not show himself, but show something about his filmmaking that would make it feel like an Eli Roth movie. You know, you had mentioned Hostel thinking it was Quentin Tarantino, and, you know, I corrected you and said it was Eli Roth, but this is an Eli Roth movie and they completely bury the legacy cell. There's no mention of Eli Roth, the director of, you know, Hostel, or director of, you know, any of his other movies. And yet people, you know, dig and find out that Eli Roth is doing this. And, you know, my research team did some research and found out that it was a whole book series. So There's a lot to this more than just a Harry Potter ripoff, you know?
And we kind of talk about movie trailers that have like the trailer to the trailer.
Yeah.
And this one is no different and completely annoying. At least Tag had like some cleverness that like introduced you like, hey, here we are. We're going to do this trailer. Hope you like it. You know, let's get into it. That's kind of how Tag was. Fine. This one, they run it. And then the scene where Jack Black, when he says things are quite different here, and literally 38 seconds later, things are quite different here. I mean, it's like, that's just time. That initial 9 seconds of intro or whatever it is like 9 seconds of my life I can't get back.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And you know what it reminds me of is commercial television, right? So let's say you're watching, oh, I don't know. You see it a lot like on Discovery and History and Animal Planet, you know, and all these like kind of cable commercial channels. And what they'll do is they'll say that, like, they'll have their programming, you know, it's about some World War II or whatever it is. It doesn't even matter. But they'll have their programming for like 3-4 minutes. And then they go to a commercial break for like 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and they spend a minute recapping what you just saw 3 minutes ago. Okay. And it for the hour long program, they do this over and over. So like the show, say, is 46 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. When it's on television, watching it as it happens with commercials, you don't necessarily pay attention or you don't necessarily catch on. But now go watch that same programming or that's those same shows on Netflix where you don't have any commercials. And what they don't do is they don't cut out that after commercial recap. So you're watching it and then you immediately watch it again to then get back into what they should be talking about, you know? So there's all these like, you just showed it to me. You're reminding me of what you just showed to me. And now you're back into this, what you should be showing me. And it's totally bizarre when you remove commercials.
Yeah.
I get the same feeling here because you show it to me just literally like 30 seconds later, the same line just occurs again. And you're like, why are you showing this to me again? Completely annoying.
And not only that, I think it's completely annoying because there's not a lot of dialogue that happens between the first time Jack Black says it and then the second time he says it. You know, there's a little bit here and there. And they're definitely getting into it. I have a feeling that the people that cut this trailer, the editor that cut this trailer, he cut this great piece that has the clock. You know what I mean? And he has this, you know, we've talked about the sound design and the music throughout a trailer. It's well designed throughout, you know, from 15 seconds through the end of the trailer. If you start there, it has its own pace. You know, the clock's always ticking in the background. The cards have their quirkiness where they're rotating like clock arms. You know, the letters are rotating like clock arms. And, you know, it's a good line. But I think at that top, they really wanted to have Jack Black deliver a line at the top. And I think they just picked the wrong one. I think if you had that montage, if you just take out that first 2 seconds of his line and instead just show the montage of the craziness that happens with the fireball and with the hand coming out and the, you know, clearing off the table. That's disorienting enough that's the kind of thing that would pull you in and let you watch it without betraying your audience 20 seconds later, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. But, you know, the thing is, like, it looks like it could have some comedy to it because, you know, kind of the way Jack Black, you know, they're talking about, oh, yeah, the monster, he's not bad if you feed him and yada, yada. But I'll tell you, though, the one scene at a minute 22.
I'm parked on it right now.
Talk about Creepsville, right?
Yep. Well, I mean, everything around that is also, I mean, you have them in the long shot on the sidewalk right before that, and it's them just waving. They're halfway down the sidewalk, and, you know, Kate Blanchett and Jack Black are waving, and it brings you to The Shining, and you think of the twins at the end of the long hallway, and you're just like, oh, this is so, like, unnerving. And then they layer on top of that dolls moving by themselves with broken eyes.
Well, that reminded me of Amityville Horror.
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't we learn from Eddie Murphy to just get out?
Sorry, baby, this is great, but we got to leave.
Sorry, baby, we can't stay. Now, you know, I mean, but the funny thing is, and that's the thing I have with these movies, right? So they're talking like how terrible and how creepy the house is and scary and all this. But why do people insist on staying? Well, I guess there'd be no movie if they just left, right?
Yeah. But,
so, yeah, you have people coming in and the way it's totally creepy. And with Amityville Horror,
The Shining.
Yeah, like you mentioned with The Shining. And then, you know, I also see like tons of Harry Potter in this. So the kid comes in and he's got the goggles. Harry has the glasses, you know, and he comes walking in and you see just the layout of it, the house, and then you have Hogwarts. You know, I mean, it's very, even the music, the cards, the whole thing is like a Harry Potter ripoff in a way. But like you said, though, there's a whole books. There's, you know, I mean, it is its own freestanding entity.
Yeah, it's its own franchise series.
Possible franchise. We'll see if they go anywhere with it.
Well, I mean, it's a franchise of books. So I guess, you know.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
Even if they don't make another movie, that's still like a book series. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, this looks super cool, you know, I mean, the magic side of things, and I don't know what to expect of it. I know we kind of talk in the past and, you know, we say how I don't like when fantasy meets reality and
right.
They blend the two. It looks like there's a little bit of that, you know, when he's walking through the school hallways and everything. I don't mind that in movies, but or TV shows for that matter. But, you know, as long as they keep it to a minimum, I don't want that to be the centerpiece. And then like the magic kind of is this background thing, which all too often, that's just how things seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
But who's the audience for this one, would you say? Teenagers? Families?
This is tweens. I think that's the problem with this movie. I think, I don't know that the DNA, the genes of an Eli Roth movie can separate enough from that creep factor that you have, you know. I will say that both the monster at the end, the purple monster, and the jack-o'-lantern face head thing monster, those two kind of lost me a little bit as far as their lack of realism. You know, you have those dolls that are photoreal,
right,
and
right,
moving around like crazy, and the hand coming out. So there's so many things that are done in a very purposeful, scary way that when you have that purple monster coming out of the room, it was just too much camp on something that is trying to be serious and scary. So I don't know if they were trying to pepper in like the humor with Jack Black to lighten the whole overall movie to broaden the appeal, but we'll see.
Yeah, I would say, my opinion, I would say definitely not a family movie with kids. Probably, I would say it's the high school, you know, like say 15, 16 to 30, 35. That's probably like the main demographics. And then you'll see a tail off from there.
Yeah.
It just has that kind of a feel to me that older adults probably aren't into this type of a genre, type of a movie. But overall, though, I think, you know, it looks like a fun movie. I mean, I could certainly say that I don't think you're going to be disappointed. You know, it's going to keep you at the edge of your seat. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think the books span 1975 to 2008.
How many books do you know?
11.
11 books. That makes for a lot of movies.
Yeah, and they're all like Narnia titles. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
The Figure in the Shadows.
Okay, talking about the title, The House with a Clock in Its Walls.
Mm-hmm.
If you just look at it on its face, how could there be one clock in all these walls? But then it's kind of like, they show the scene with Jack Black. He has the stethoscope and he's looking at, like, he's got it up to the wall and he's like, the house with the clock in its walls. And he's trying to find the clock because it's ticking in all of the walls. So, yeah, there's one clock, lots of walls. Where the heck is the clock? You know, kind of a thing. And they kind of give that away about midway through in the trailer, too. Like, they give you the spoils. But the one thing that's cool is when Jack Black says, well, no, let me back up a little bit. Oh, so Kate Blanchett says to Jack Black, so you told Lewis everything?
Well, not everything.
And Jack Black replies, well, not everything. So the one thing is, I mean, and I think that's brilliant marketing because it says to the audience, like, well, there's more to be seen. You got to come to the theater, find out what everything is.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll find out what everything is. Whatever. I don't know what it is. And how would you know if you don't see it, right?
Yeah, no, it looks like fun. It looks like something you hope that the Harry Potter fans would like.
Oh, that's who it's talking to for sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll probably end up seeing this in the theaters. We'll see. We'll see if the other trailers show it as a darker movie or a lighter movie.
Oh, you're saying the follow-up trailers when they come.
Yeah. Subsequent pieces, TV spots, all that.
Sure. All right. Three-word review. What do you have?
All right. So the three-word review for this, and this is a three-word review for many movies. It says it's called Too Many Prepositions.
Too Many Prepositions.
I love one of my favorite new franchises is the Planet of the Apes, but it does something to me when it says, you know, the dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The meter of saying that title to me is like, takes me out of it. It's like, all right, I'm not going to talk about it. I call that movie Dawn, you know, you know, the ape movie. Yeah. The Ape Dawn movie. Yeah. We'll just cut it down to that. You know, the Ape War movie. That was great. They're great. It's a great franchise. And I understand that that's one where there is a lot imbued into the title. So I wouldn't say you need to rename that. And these are book titles, so you can't rename this either. You know, everything's based on these other things, so there's a lot of legacy that's, you know, jammed into these titles. So
right,
I don't know. There, you're between a rock and a hard place. That's preposition related as well. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's cool. That's cool. But all right. So yeah, I think we covered three good ones.
Cool.
Yeah. Anything, any final thoughts for any of the three or anything that you want to add in or let the listeners know?
Yeah. So we're running a giveaway on Twitter. And for this month, from the 22nd to April 22nd, we're giving away a poster. If you post a comment and then send me a tweet with a picture of the comment and some contact information, we'll put you in the running for a poster giveaway. And to sweeten the deal, the first one that I get will also get a poster. So you could be first and you could post a comment and a rating on any one of our platforms, and you'll get a poster. And then at the end of on the 22nd, we'll have a drawing, and another person, or the same person, you won't be excluded from that, we'll also get a poster from the giveaway.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So, well, I think we had another good week. Three fun movies. I think three very different movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of coming of age, and then a buddy dude movie that, you know, we seem to do at least every other week. But hey, you know, we only do what they make, right?
So we do what's out there.
Yeah. If they're not making buddy dude movies, we're not reviewing buddy dude movies. So that's just how it goes. All right, Ted. Yeah, I had a great time this week.
All right. Awesome, Jimmy. See you next week. All right. Bye.
Great thing, man. All right. Hey, you have a good night. We'll talk to you later.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.